Talking about the Muslim movements, and so here I'm going to work a little backwards. We were talking last week about the Altar of Slobodka. I'm going to go backwards to the founding father, so to speak, of the Muslim movement, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Yisrael Salanter, his last name was Lipkin. Salanter was simply the city, which is really a small village near Vilna, from which he was born. You may have heard of Rav Shmuel Salant, who was his cousin. He later became the Rav of Yerushalayim. And Rav Yisrael Salanter began more or less as a conventional Eloi who became a Rosh Hashiva at a very young age. His father was also an Adam Gadol. In fact, people don't realize one of the, although in the Oso Hadar you can't tell anymore, but one of the Mefarshim in the back of the Vilna Shas is Rav Yisrael Salanter's father, so he's actually in the standard Vilna Shas. In fact, I believe the father was Rav of Telz before Rav Elazar Gordon. And the story of Yisrael Salanter, he became a Rosh Hashiva in Vilna at a very young age. He was a tremendous Eloi, very, very brilliant. His derech was a pre Rav Chaim derech. His derech was the derech of Pilpul, in which he was makasher many, many things together. But around the age of 25, he decided on a new plan in his life, a new tachnit, a new vision of life. And there are many, many different stories. Some of the stories go back to his childhood, but Lamaisa, as a career, he did not really embark on this till age 25. As a child, he was in the habit of following around a certain tzaddik nister that he was very, very attached to. This was a tzaddik who was not a rav, not a rosh yeshiva. This was a peddler. And this was the person that is known as Rav Zundel of Salant. Rav Zundel of Salant was not necessarily meforsam, but even as a young boy, Rav Yisrael Salanter noticed a certain aura, a certain sitkus about Rav Zundel, and he used to follow Rav Zundel around all the time. He used to like spy on him, frankly. He would watch him, where he went, how he davened, where he went after davening, etc. Different stories of seeing him deliver wood to an almana in the middle of the night when nobody was looking, shoveling the snow away from the Beis HaKnesses when nobody was around. Rav Yisrael Salanter was the little spy hiding in the bushes, watching Rav Zundel's movements. And at one point, Rav Zundel caught him and said, Yisrael, learn Musar, and you will be a Yerei Shemayim. And as I say, that was a childhood experience, but it didn't turn into an actual plan until later. Other people tell the story that Rav Yisrael once saw a shoemaker in Vilna who was sewing up leather shoes by the light of a candle as it was getting dark, and the shoemaker was squinting and it was very, very difficult. And he asked the shoemaker, why are you doing all this? And the shoemaker responded in what has already become like a legend, that as long as the candle burns, there is work to be done. And this was the idea that Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam, a person's neshama, is a Ner Hashem, and there has to be work to be done. But Lamaisa, they say the actual trigger is Kemat, an unknown story, and that is Rav Yisrael was made a Rosh Hashiva in Vilna. Now Vilna did not have, as amazingly enough, although Vilna was the Yerushalayim Delita, the Yerushalayim of Lita, Vilna did not have a meforsam, what you would call a world-class yeshiva of the nature of Slobodka, Mir, Telz, Panovich. Vilna had many, many Batei Medrash. Vilna had many, many great Talmidei Chachamim, many Gedolim. It also had many Maskilim, many communists. It had people of all types. It really was a cosmopolitan town of all the different Zeramim in Yiddishkeit. Except for Reform. Reform just... there were no literature Reform. Either you were a Maskil or you were from. There was no concept of a Reform in Lithuania at all. But Vilna did not have a Meforsam Dika Yeshiva, strangely enough. There were smaller yeshivas. And Rabbi Saul was made a young Rosh Yeshiva. He was a tremendous Eloi. But he found out later, not knowing this, that he was made a Rosh Yeshiva because they wanted him so much they fired the preceding Rosh Yeshiva. They simply fired him. The Rosh Yeshiva was an Adam Gadol, and they just got rid of him to bring in Rabbi Yisrael. And this was Gairam, a tremendous machlokas. The older Rosh Yeshiva had supporters, and Rabbi Yisrael heard Lashon Hara and Tainus and Tvias, and he saw that even Bnei Tirid, even Talmidei Chachamim, were Isaac in all sorts of machloksim and accusations. And Bichlal, he could not see taking a position away from somebody else. And as a result, he retired, he resigned from the position to give it back to the other person. And it is said that that was the historical event that made him be makir, that in our generation, Torah was no longer enough, that people could learn Torah, and they could still be mushchas in midas rice, they could still be mashuka in taiva, they could be involved in kina, they could be involved in sinna. And he realized that the tzarech chador was to do something else, something more. Something to understand that the door required a conscious work and a conscious striving in both Yiras Hashem and in Bein Adam L'Chaveri. And these were the yesaidis of what became known as the Tznuas HaMusar. And therefore, from that point on, Rabbi Yisrael saw a new goal in his life. It is also brought down, again, these are separate stories, so it's hard to know how to be makatra them together, that in Lita, there was a hanhaga, it was never wide, but there was a hanhaga of what you would call prushim. In fact, to this day, you know, we call the Talmidei Agra the prushim. But there actually was a concept of a parish. And a parish quite literally meant a hermit. In other words, there were people who would go into the forest, and they would serve Hashem in isolation. They'd be away from their families. Maybe they'd come home every Shabbos, may Erev Shabbos, the Erev Shabbos. And they would be Isaac, Lagamri, in Taira, Tefillah. And it was Mamish Bitsnias. Nobody knew who they were. Hidden Sadiqim, or people knew who they were, but they were not involved with anybody. As a young man, Rabbi Yisrael was also attracted to that Mahalach. But then, as a result of different meisim and different things that he saw, he said that he no longer had the luxury to concentrate on his own aliyah. He had to be mechazik the door, and he said, "Listen, for me to be a parash, that would be great for me. But what about my achrayas for the door?" They tell a similar story much, much, much later about the Chazon Ish. This is much, much later. The Chazon Ish, you know, was more or less, I mean, he wasn't the poorest. The Chazon Ish was never in the forest. But the Chazon Ish was a very anonymous person. The Chazon Ish lived in Vilna. He didn't come to Eretz Yisrael until he was after 50. So they come out the first 50 years of his life. He was just sitting and learning. Some Gedalim knew him, Rav Chaim Eiser knew him, etc. But you know, that's why the Chazon Ish wrote his sefer anonymously. The Chazon Ish, the Chazon of Avraham Yeshaya, people didn't know who he was. He knew Rav Chaim Eiser knew him, but the Chazon Ish didn't want to be involved in Rabbanus, didn't want to lead a yeshiva, didn't want to give a shir. And the story goes, he once went to visit the Chafetz Chaim in Radin. Again, this is two dairies after every Sol's Lander, but you'll see a similar point. And many people say this, whenever they would come to hear the Chafetz Chaim give a public drasha, just a public drasha, the Chafetz Chaim always said something, al pi ruach hakodesh or something, that was exactly the musar that the person needed to hear. Exactly. Punkt the shayla. And the Chafetz Chaim was talking about the fact that in a door, when Torah is so much forsaken because of Haskalah, because of modern society, a person doesn't have the luxury of just focusing on himself. He has an achrayas to be mechazik the door. And the Chafetz Chaim said, it sounds almost funny, he said, you know, if I would just sit and learn by myself, the Chafetz Chaim said, even I would have become a Talmud Chacham. Because even Yisrael Meir could have known how to learn. It's no big kunst to be a Talmud Chacham if all you do is learn by yourself. But, he says, I was mavater on what I could have achieved in Torah to be mechazik the door in different inyanim. And the Chazon Ish heard that, and the Chazon Ish realized that the Chafetz Chaim was indirectly speaking to him. The Chassam Sofer, very famous, the Chassam Sofer writes in the Hakdama to the Tshuvas Chelek Yerideya, that this is why Avraham Avinu is called Avraham Ohavi. Avraham, the one who loves me. Because he says, Avraham Avinu, in order to be Mekadei Shem Shamayim, gave up the spiritual aliyah that he would have had he separated from the Rishayim of the world. And he was willing to be Meiser Nefesh. The Chassam Sofer says, this is the Taich of Mesiras Nefesh. If you're willing to die to serve Hashem, that's Mesiras Aguf. Fasefes Mesiras Nefesh. Chassam Sofer says, Mesiras Nefesh is when a person gives up even his ruchnius to be Makadish. So because of this, Rabbi Saul Salanter, so stage one of his career, so to speak, he was a, you know, well, not yet a gadol perhaps, but certainly a tremendous, tremendous Eloi, a person who had an asidus as Gedali Ador. He was already a Rosh Hashiva in his very early 20s, but he left it and he embarked on a different program. We'll talk about that program in a second. Yeah, did you want to say?
Didn't the Chazon Ish try and stay private even after he came to Eretz Yisrael?
Not totally. I mean, he wanted to be private, but private was not as private in Vilna. And at that point,
wasn't it against his will that he was found out, so to speak?
No, not quite. Not quite. I don't think he envisioned perhaps the Pearson that he had.
But the
Chazon Ish also planned a number of things. The reason why he moved to Bnei Brak, which was a very young city then. Bnei Brak was just started in the 1920s, and the Chazon Ish came in the 1930s. Remember, the Chazon Ish came to Eretz Yisrael before the war. The Chazon Ish escaped the Holocaust, and there's a very, very strange and scary comment. It's hard to understand it exactly what it means, where the Chazon Ish was said later, he was not totally aware of the Chorban in Europe, and had he have been aware, he wouldn't have let the Ribbono Shel Olam do it. It's a little scary exactly what that means. But the reason the Chazon Ish settled in Bnei Brak is the Chazon Ish did want to be involved in creating a new shtut that would be miyusid in Torah. So perhaps the Chazon Ish didn't envision he would be the gadol and the manig of the entire Torah world, but in Chol Chos in Bnei Brak he said he was going to get involved in. He didn't want to go to Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim already had its minhagim, already had its anhagas. etc. B'nai Brak was new ground. So the Chaznish had some type of cheshbon. But you're right. He actually, the Chaznish didn't want to become the leader of the whole Torah world. It's interesting, just as an aside, how the Chaznish actually became famous as a Paisek. It's very interesting. Was his international dateline. This was the issue that made the Chaznish a world famous Paisek in terms of his unusual psak, because the Chaznish is a psak, which Lamaisa most people do not follow. Only Yechidim follow it, Lechumra, is that the international dateline is only 6 hours, as opposed to the middle of the Pacific, it is only 6 hours east of Yerushalayim, meaning to say, according to the Chaznish, Japan and China are 24 hours earlier than they are internationally. I mean, according to the Chaznish, when it is Saturday in Japan, it is halachically Friday, and therefore you keep Shabbos in Japan on Sunday, and Yom Kippur as well. And he said to the Mir, Bachram in Mir, or the Yeshiva in Mir, that they have to keep Yom Kippur the day after. It would be Yom Kippur based on the regular dateline. Okay, that's a controversy. We don't have to talk about all the pratim there. And Lamaisa, as I say, La Halacha, people are not Nayeg like the Chaznish, although some people, Gabi Malacha de Yoraisa, on Sunday will not do Malachas de Yoraisa, but they'll put on tefillin. The Chaznish held Lagami. The Chaznish was so confident of his Psach, which is based on the Balamor and the Kuzari in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, that the Chaznish said that there is absolutely no reason that Saturday in Japan is Mamish Chol, and you put on tefillin, and you do Malachas D'Oraisa, and Shabbos Legamri is Sunday. You know, the Chaznish was not being machmer in both days. He held Behekli the other way. Most Gedolim were Chaylik, but because Rav Chaska Levenstein and others held like the Chaznish, that's how the Chaznish got a lot of Pirsim. And then, of course, his Hanhagas about Shemitah. See, the godless of the Chaznish as a Paisek is... Although the Chaznish was very machmer, there's no question the Chaznish was very machmer Dirka Paisek, but the Chaznish never said no without giving you a yes. Meaning to say, the Chaznish didn't just say what was usher on Shemitah. The Chaznish always developed a fanim that the Yishuv could grow and do things. In other words, that's a very, very interesting idea, that the Chaznish didn't just say usher, he always developed different methods of being able to do what needed to be done with milking and all sorts of things. So it just became bigger and bigger and bigger, that more and more people... It's like the New York Times once had an interview with Rav Moshe. I don't know why Rav Moshe gave the interview, but I think it was Rav Moshe's 70th birthday. So the reporter asked Rav Moshe, like, you know, how do you become, like, you know, the Gadol Hador kind of, you know, you know, the greatest rabbi everyone goes to. So Rav Moshe was such a sweet, sweet person. Rav Moshe said, well, you know, somebody asked you a shayla, and you know they like the answer. They tell somebody else, "Hey, this is a good rabbi to ask," and somebody else asks. So eventually, he says, "A lot of people ask you, and a lot of people ask you shaylas." Rabbi says, "Oh, you know, I said, I'm not the greatest rabbi," he said, "but you know, a lot of people ask me because you know word of mouth." Actually, I heard from my Rosh Yeshiva of Yaakov Weinberg, who grew up on the Lower East Side when Rav Moshe was there. This was probably around 90 years ago already. So he says that all the housewives used to send their chickens to Rav Moshe because the Rabbanim normally charged 5 cents to paskin on a chicken. He says Rav Moshe did it for free. So he says that already attracted a lot of Hilchus Trapus, Trapus Dalis, and the like. So there are different ways you become a gadol and the like. Okay, but anyway, the thing is that Rav Yisrael changed his tachnit, and Rav Yisrael developed a plan that is called the Inyan of Musar. Now, let me go back a little bit. Yeah, I'm sorry.
The other story with the shoemaker is a fable?
It might be. It's hard to know. It might be. You know, it's hard to know. You know, the makor for all of these great stories, and there are many, we're supposed to find there are many, 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 many stories and one line, Verklach. There is a 5-volume set of svarim, beautiful, beautiful svarim. It's called Snuas HaMusar. And Snuas HaMusar was written by Rav Dov Katz, who someone who learned in Europe, the Talmud of a Talmud of a Talmud, but in the Shalshelis of Musar. And the 5 volumes are devoted to all of the Gedolei Musar. Now he includes the Chavetz Chaim, etc. And volume one, the whole volume one, like 500 pages, is devoted to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, including the biography, including the ksavim, and including the short, like, one-line statements that are attributed, such as, don't be a tzaddik on somebody else's cheshbon, all of these famous ideas that, you know, your frumkeit should not be a source of agmas nefesh to somebody else. Now, he has on the altar of Kelm, the altar of Slobodka, the altar of Novardik, Rav Yitzchak Blazer, Rav Yisrael Petterberger, we'll talk about tonight, Rav Naftali Amsterdam. So Rav Yisrael gets a whole volume, let's say Rav Simcha Sissel gets half a volume too. And then there are people who only have, you know, three or four pages. He tries to be very, very complete. But it's a tremendous repository of all sorts of things, but not everything is mamish, you know, bidiyuk, historically. It's a repository of many, many inyanim. Now Rav Dov Katz wrote a companion volume that was not printed with the five volumes, and that is called Pulmus HaMusar. This is a documentation of all the machlokas against the Musar, which we'll talk about. He didn't want to print it with the regular set because he didn't want to encourage Badafka, curious yeshiva boys who just wanted to read about Lashon Hara, but people wanted to understand the Mavucha. So I remember in Yerich Yisrael, we were always looking for this Pulmus HaMusar. I remember when somebody had a copy, it was like, Kemaitzei Sholol Rav. But again, maybe that's a chisar in an army, thus, that we were more interested in the Pulmus HaMusar than the Tznuas HaMusar, which was the Iker, Iker Sefer. But Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, so the question becomes, what did he mean? What was Rabbi Yisrael Salanter doing? If he simply meant, you know, you learn 15 minutes or even half an hour of Shari Tshuva, Mesila Shesharim, Chayves HaLevavos, there wouldn't be such a big machloikas about this. There wouldn't be so controversial. First of all, you'll notice the very Svarim I mentioned are all way before Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Chayves HaLevavos is from the time of the Rishonim. It's before the Rambam. The Rambam is meyad that his father enjoyed learning Chayves HaLevavos. That was his father's favorite sefer. It was in Arabic then. Ramchal was not so much before, but Ramchal was 100 years before Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Right before the Vilna Gaon. The Ramchal was before the Vilna Gaon. Sharei Tshuva, one of the Gedalei HaRishonim, Rabbeinu Yaina. So obviously, not only were these Sforim written, but they were learned. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was not Mechadesh, that people would learn, at least sometimes, Chayves HaLevavos, Mesila Shesharim, etc. People were learning these Sforim. So people make a big mistake when they think that Tznuas HaMusar just means the idea that a person should learn a few Sforim. Rabbi Yisrael's Tachnit was very, very multifaceted. First of all, in the Limud of Musar itself, he was very innovative. Because he tined that you have to learn Musar on two different levels. There is what is called Musar Be'ian. And he says, based on the Pasuk in Mishlei, Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem, that the beginning of Chachma is Yiras Hashem, he says, the same way there is a Chachma in the Ian of Torah, there has to be a Chachma in the Ian of Midas. Meaning, besides the fact that it's based on Mamari Chazal, but a person has to learn Musar Be'in, that a person has to go into the Musagim, a person has to analyze them with the same depth that a person would go through any other sugya in Shas, that was called Musar Be'in. But then Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said that just because you've absorbed ideas in your mind, that does not necessarily change your midas. That there's a lev and there's a mayach. And in order for there to be emotional penetration, there was a musar called musar b'hispailus. Hispailus means emotional arousal. And there were methodologies for this. You would take a pasuk, a mantra, a pasuk or a maimer chazal, and you would just say it over. You would cry it out 100 times, 200 times, 500 times. Histakel v'shleisha devarim with a nigan. Right? The old Bali Musar had a certain nigan. Histakel v'shleisha devarim v'ein atabali dechait. Right? Even today, sometimes the old Magidim have a certain nigan, but that's really from Yisrael Salanter. Look at three things, and you won't come to a chait. I may ayin basa, uliyan atahaylech, v'lifnei mi atahasid litain din v'cheshbin. My ayin basa pirkei avos mitipa srucha ulana tahelech lamakayim rima afar v'saylaya lufnei mi ato aser. I'd actually say this that the Yerushalmi Levaya, they say it. Lufnei ato din v'cheshben v'melech malchei amlachei, and you'd say it over and over again till you were moved to tears. This is called Musar b'hispailus. you weren't supposed to be ma'ayin, so to speak. Because sometimes, davening is the same issue. Sometimes people like, you know, people think learning b'kavana is you're thinking over the 50 pshatim, like what's the difference between slicha and kapara, you know, like you learn a perush on tefillah, it goes to the different lashonos, and that's a good limud. But you know, you're not supposed to be clearing, when you're davening Shemone Esrei, you're not supposed to be clearing chakiris. So why does it say, you know, whatever, Salach lanu avinu ki chatan, right? Tefillah, you're focusing on talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All of the limud of tefillah you do beforehand, and then the tefillah should just be talking to Hashem, it shouldn't be clearing bein. And therefore, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said there was a nechitzas for Musar Behis Pailas. It is brought down that at a Levaya, he once had a chaver who was very, very close to him. He was a financial supporter and also a Talmud. And the person died relatively young. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter gave a hesped, and all he said over was, he said over a pasuk from Kehelas, and he just said it over and over and over again. The pasuk in Kehelas talks about death, right? Kehelas has many things that are ma'ir, sadness. And it says that people are like dogim hanechazim bimtsula. That when death hits us without warning, we are like fish that are captured in the net, pulled out of the water. So again, the drasha is pulled out of Torah, even shemeis adam, chavshimim. But all he said, he didn't give any drashas, he didn't give any interpretations. Kidogim hanechazim bimtsula. And he just said it 50 times, and it says the whole Beis Knesset was nisayrer bibachia, with crying and sobbing and the like. So that's Musar Behis Pailas. But then Rabbi Yisrael had a third plan. And his third plan is, it's not enough to learn Musar Be'ian so you understand the Rayayinais that are Tomon in Chazal. And it's not even enough to have emotional arousal. But a yisayd of Musar is to know yourself, to understand what makes you operate. Now again, there's a whole interesting speculation. Rabbi Yisrael was doing this kind of around the time of Sigmund Freud, but he was earlier than Sigmund Freud. So some people, Rabbi Yisrael talks about the subconscious, Rabbi Yisrael talks about the idea that we don't always know why we do certain things. And he said, the more you try to understand yourself, the more you will have mastery over yourself. If you know what makes you tick, you're able to control it. What makes me angry? Why do I get angry when certain things happen? And he said, so as I say, people think Freud invented the subconscious, Rabbi Yisrael, you know, talked about it, and he based it on Chazal's ultimately. So Rabbi Yisrael didn't get it from Freud, that's for sure, because Rabbi Yisrael was a little before Freud. Did Freud get it from Rabbi Yisrael? It's actually possible. The issue of what did Freud get from Judaism, although he distorted it, is very, very interesting. They say, although I have a suspicion that this is a Bubba Meister, but they say they found in Freud's office a Zohar with Freud's notes on it. I think it's above mice a little bit, but he does come. He does come from Rabbanim. His ancestors were Rabbanim. Yes, that's very correct. The Rebbe Rashab, Rav Shalom Baber, Rav Shalom Dayu Fishnerslin, actually went to Freud for Tikkun, for depression or whatever it is. And it's very interesting. I mean, some people say, oh, you can't talk about that because you're degrading the Rebbe. I've always thought Pumfakert, the fact that here you had, number one, he was suffering depression and he still did a tremendous amount. In other words, he did not allow what used to be called Mara Shechaira, black bile. That's actually the way the Rishonim described depression, based on the idea that there are four fluids in the body that influence certain midas. So Mara Shechaira, black bile, is the one that's Gairim depression. So you see that he didn't allow Mara Shechaira to shter him. And number two, the Anava of seeking Tipulim, so actually it's actually a tribute to him. Freud told him, it's interesting how they record that, Freud told him, you know, the problem is that you never get positive feedback. Everybody tells you they're tzaris, but they never tell you when things work out. So Mamela, you know, it's hard to be a Rebbe. You only hear the negative side of things. Okay. But be it as it may, Rabbi Yisrael was a pioneer, literally, of the notion of the unconscious. And therefore he talked about not just learning the Sefer, but going into yourself and understanding, why am I angry? When do I feel gaiva? When do I feel a lack of self-esteem? Because his concept is, what you understand, you have a shlita over. But he also understood that because we're such a nageya bedavar, we often are not able to understand what makes us tick. So that's why you need a chaver or a vad, actually group therapy, in the sense that people would come together. But it's very unusual. It doesn't just mean people come together to learn Mesilas Yesharim. They would come together to analyze each other. In other words, we would sit down and say, okay, I was angry 3 times this week. I want to describe the Masif. And the Chaverim would discuss, you know, how do you deal with it? How do you improve? Right? Now, if you look at the second Chaluk of Ali Shor, Rav Volba, who maybe might have been the last emistic of Baal Musar, following these techniques, if you look at Chaluk Beis of Ali Shor, Chaluk Aleph of Ali Shor is one of the most beautiful examples of Musar Be'in, in which he takes Rayayinais of Chazal and the Kuzari and Maror Nevuchim from all over the place. Derech Hashem. And Rav Volba kind of analyzes it in depth. It's a very, very, it's a sefer of Musar Be'in. But if you look at the second chelek of Ali Shor, which is a big, fat chelek, it's not about Musar Be'in anymore. It's about how to have a Musar Vad, where you work on midos one at a time. This week we're going to work on kas. We have 14 lessons on controlling kas. You know, you open it up, it may even seem like a children's book. Okay, this week you're going to work on, every time you see somebody, you're going to smile at them and say, how are you? And even though it's hard, you're going to force yourself, it's very hard to fake a smile, you're going to force yourself to be nice. Exercises. Now the emes is, nothing of this is new. The Rambam himself says in the Shemayin HaPrachim that Tikkun HaMidos comes from repetitive action. In fact, the Rambam says an interesting halacha in the Shemayin HaPrachim. I'm sorry, not in Pirkei Avos itself. And he says that if you have $1,000, I'm using dollars, whatever it is, he says, for Tikkun HaMidos, it's better to give $1 to 1,000 people than give $1,000 to one person, because the midos of a person are mesukin according to repetitive action. So the Rambam said that.
You become a nosei.
Huh?
You become a nosei.
Right, you develop generosity. Now, that doesn't mean, by the way, halachically you should follow that. The Rambam is simply saying, if your goal in staka is tikkun hamidos, the more repetitive actions you do, the more you mesukin. However, that's not the only goal of staka. There's also a goal of staka to maximize the help you're giving, and in many, many cases, I give everybody a little bit, I'm not really helping. Okay, so that's an interesting Shelas Chacham, meaning how much of my tzedaka should be gebayt on tikkun hamidos, and how much of my tzedaka should be gebayt on helping people, which would require maybe giving more to a family. Right? I mean, you're not helping. You give a shekel to 1,000 people is much less useful than giving 1,000 shkolim. Right? So that's a Shelas Chacham. I'm not going to be machria on that for now. But Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, I think, added that it's not just the repetition of action, but it's also the self-understanding, the havana, the looking into yourself. Now, this already was a little bit controversial in Lita. They thought, hey, what is this? Psychology, psychoanalysis, cheshbon hanefesh. I mean, cheshbon hanefesh, you work through in a literal way. What are my averus? But, you know, that was always existing. But to go through your motivations and analyze yourself so much, they thought it was a shter. And at some point, it involved not just 15 minutes of musar a day, it involved maybe hours a day on this type of cheshbon. So there were gedolim that were misnaged. They thought, number one, that this was one of those new movements, just like we might call, you know, pop psychology. And remember, we're competing with a whole bunch of movements, whether it's Reform or Haskalah, and they thought this is kind of variety. And let me point out as well, that although this wasn't Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's motive, but in a way, Musar was addressing a taina of Haskalah. I think I made this point earlier. That is, part of the way Maskilim would entice Jews to go to them would be, what is so great about this yeshiva derech haTorah? Yeah, people might be smart, etc. But not only are they not educated in the wisdom of the world, but they're not refined, they're rude, they're crass. they're unrefined, they push, you know, they insult. But Masha'en Kain, we, the Maskilim, we are men of the world, we are people of refinement, we are people of manners. In a sense, the concept was, if the Yeshiva Limud, particularly Rav Chaim's Derech, was a teretz to counter the intellectual attraction of Haskalah, Musar was also a way of countering the cultural attack of Haskalah. Right? Haskalah was basically saying, the old Frumkeit did not produce refined people. People were mushkas b'midas. So in a sense, Rabbi Yisrael was countering that. In fact, because of that, there were maskilim who actually thought Rabbi Yisrael was one of them. It's interesting. The maskilim would claim all sorts of things. They claimed that Vilna Gaon was one of them because Vilna Gaon learned many chachmas. And they claimed Rabbi Yisrael was one of them. And in fact, there's a whole story here. You know, Rabbi Yisrael, unfortunately, had a child who was not religious. He was not a Shomer Shabbos. And this child became a very, very famous professor of mathematics. In fact, in trigonometry, there's something called the Lipkin. Lipkin is the family name. Lipkin parallelogram. And this was the discovery. I don't know exactly how you discover a parallelogram, but this is something that the son did. So when the son won an award and became a full professor in Odessa, so the Maskilim, they always were looking for any type of Pesach. They published a full page ad in one of the Yiddish papers saying, we want to congratulate the Gaon and the Tzaddik, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, on raising a son who is not only a fine member of Am Yisrael, Machal Shabbos, but a fine member of Am Yisrael, but also a person who is in the chachmas of the world, and we're sure that such a son could become what he became only because of the teachings of his father. So he published the whole page ad.
The article was the chief of staff, huh?
What, here?
Yeah.
Karev. I don't know if it's a direct Einikol or not. But
it was Einikol of Yisrael, right?
I don't remember. It was Einikol or a great-nephew. I don't remember. Yeah, Lipkin, you're correct. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter himself published a full-page ad in refutation because he said it was a Chilul Hashem. And he said, I love my son tremendously. But the pain of my son not being a Shomer Mitzvah is very, very tremendous. And I beg and I plead that anyone that could be Mashpia on my son to be a Shomer Mitzvah would be a tremendous nachas to the Kadosh Baruch Hu and a nachas to me. And unfortunately, I cannot get nachas, I cannot get joy for my son who is not going b'derech hatera. He said, even though this was a big busha for him to have to put in a full page ad, but he said, al chilul Hashem, he had to do it. Yeah. He did. In fact, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter had an interesting shita that I'm not sure if Rabbi Yashu would be masking to. Rabbi Yisrael had a shita that even if people are sinning, you're madrich them how to do the sin in a lesser way. The story goes, I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, that for a long time of his life he was in Germany. And in Königsberg, which is a port town, the longshoremen who would unload the boats were all Yidden. And they were, Shabbos is the busiest day, that's when the most ships come in. So they were Mechal Shabbos Befarhesia. So he spent weeks and weeks teaching them how every Maisa of Chilul Shabbos could be done with a small shinoi to make it into an Isser Drabanan. By the way, I want to contrast Achenu HaSfardim. In Salonika in Greece, all of the longshoremen were also Yidden, and that was the only port in Europe that was closed on Shabbos. They refused to work on Shabbos.
But the boat's time was Kesher Sheinu Kayama.
Right, now Kayama, all sorts of things. And they say with his son, the same thing. He was Madrich his son, that if you're going to eat treif, better to eat nevela instead of chazer. He was Madrichim because he says, Timtum Alev is greater for Behemoth Tmeah Although the mice, in terms of chaimer, it's lav dafkin, the veil is more chaimer, that behemoth tumah is more chaimer. Both of them are just lavin. But he said, please eat nevela, don't eat. He was mamish madrich. This was the shita. The reason I say Rav Yashav might not be maskim is because Rav Yashav, there's sometimes a klal the Gemara uses, haliteu the rasha v'yamais, meaning someone is a rasha, someone is a mairet, you don't have any achlas. If he's not going to be shomea teichecha, you don't try to say, okay, we'll do the aveira this way instead of this way. This comes up a lot, by the way. You'd be amazed. This is a shaila that, as if any of you are going to be rabbanim, or even on college campuses, you may have to address this issue. For example, let's say you have a man and a woman who are living together out of wedlock. They're not married. They're just having sexual relations. Should you be madrich the woman to go to a mikveh? Because the chalapach is you take away the yisr kares of nida. Or le'idach kisa, let's say even they are married, but they refuse to keep taras and mishpacha lagamri. But can you encourage the woman to go to the mikveh after 7 days from the onset of the period, even if they're not even nikiyim? Because a nida of the araisa doesn't need zayin nikiyim, right? In other words, is there such a cheshbon that your miyayetz people to do averos in a lesser eifin? That's Rabbi Yisrael Shita for sure. Although in the case of mikveh, there may be I'm not automatically saying what Rabbi Yisrael would say, but the overall hashkafa is that if people are going to sin, you handle with them, and you try to bring them to a lower level of sin, as opposed to the attitude that if somebody is not mekabel teichecha, then all right, maybe they're not ready yet, but you don't try to minimize the infraction. Yeah.
Is either side mechad no more lahachas
in the tail? No. Of course, a mumer lahachas, in all likelihood, is not going to listen to Rabbi Yisrael's aitzes. I mean, almost by definition, Rabbi Yisrael's hadracha is addressed to a murmur l'teyavan, right? Because why would a murmur l'haches go from a doraisa to a drabanan, right? So kemat benimsa, it would be. So really, the test is not.
The Gemara question that the Gemara is also referring to a murmur l'teyavan.
No, in the Gemara itself, not. But all I'm saying is that this machlekes Rabbi Yisrael and the Rabbi Yashiv, if it is a machlekes Rabbi Yashiv.
So Rabbi Yashiv would say this even by him.
Those were the cases, basically. He says, the test, according to Rabbi Yashiv, is if the person is not mekabel teichecha. So you're not metabel if he's not mekabel.
Rabbi Yashiv had that question with women in the army, whether she wear the short skirt or to wear pants.
Right.
I don't wear pants, he said.
That's right. Rabbi Miyuta. Yeah. So this was very, so especially what was very controversial was Rabbi Yisrael's emphasis on group therapy, psychoanalysis, I'm using secular words, and the deep cheshbon ha-nefesh, which doesn't only go to, what are my averos, that's one thing, but it goes to what are my psychological motivations, what is my panemius, what is my gut reaction, why do I get angry, and this idea of thinking, constantly thinking. Now, you'll see in a moment why the Chazon Ish was misnaged to a certain aspect of this. And because of this, Rabbi Yisrael was miyaseh in many communities, what's called a base musser. What was a base musser? A base musser was actually a house, it was a base medrash, but it wasn't a general base medrash with a shas and a rambam and a shulchan aruch and mesilas shasharas. It was a bias which only had sifrei musser. You couldn't learn Gemara if you wanted to, unless you brought your own, but then they wouldn't let you in. There was no Gemara there. It was a place where you only worked on inyanim of Musar, Tikkun Amidos, Yiras Hashem. Base Musar. Like Rav Olba established a base Musar here in Yerushalayim. So, the Misnagdim of Musar criticized this in particular with a certain joke. It's a nice joke. It says in Hallel, or it says in Tehillim, Beis HaLevi Baruch Hu Hashem, Beis Aaron, Baruch Hu Hashem. So the Beis Levi blesses Hashem, Beis Aaron blesses Hashem. But then it says, Yirei Hashem, Baruch Hu Hashem. So for Yirei Hashem, Shteitnish, there's a bias. Yirei Hashem don't need their separate bias. They can go to a regular Beis Medrash. He says, why is he establishing a base on Moshem? So because of this, there was a tremendous isnagdus. Now, as usual, whenever there's machloks among the Rabbanim, yeshiva guys like to get involved. and often in very inappropriate ways. In Tells in particular, Rabbi Elazar Gordon was a Talmud chaver of Rabbi Yisrael. He wasn't exactly a Talmud, he was come out the same age, but he was very, very machshir, Rabbi Yisrael Galanter. And Tells was one of the first yeshivas, around the same time as Slobodka, that was miyasid in Yonim of Musar, and the mashgiach they hired was Rabbi Yehuda Leib Chasman. Was a great, the Oriah, okay, really Chasman came to Eretz Yisrael, became Mashgiach in Hebron. And the altar tells her Bachrim, like in Volozhin, which never had Musar Taka, they actually attacked Rabbi Leib Chasman, and they, it's recorded, they in the middle of a schmooze, they extinguished the lights. It wasn't electric, it was whatever it was, gas lamps. They threw him in a bag. They took him in a big bag and they carried him out. They threw him out of yeshiva. They threw him out of yeshiva. Mamish, such a priestess, such a chutzpah to someone who was also a big Talmud Chacham. He was not just a Baal Musar. He was also a big, big Talmud Chacham. And Elazar Gordon wanted to, he didn't know who did it. He wanted to close the yeshiva. He says, Mamish, he wanted to close the yeshiva. He says, if this is what a Makom Torah allows people to do, he says, it's not kedai to have a Makom Torah. So somebody convinced him it was only a miyat, it wasn't a rove, and they calmed him down. But this is how aggressive it was. Now, that's why the Chazon Ish once said a beautiful thing, and he said it about this. Again, I'm mixing people from different tikkufas. The Chazon Ish said he's against Musar for reasons I'll discuss, but he's against the misnagdim of Musar even more. Meaning, he's against what Musar does. He felt that didn't have to be done. But the misnagdim who showed such a chutzpah and a lack of Yerushalayim, they're a lot worse than the Baalei Musar who work on Yerushalayim. Yeah.
Did Rabbi Yisrael ever write together like you should have first Seder and then second, like half of the first half of the second Seder should be Musar and then the second half should be back to learning? Ever a discussion about
it? It didn't get that exact. That was left to yeshivas.
So you work on the Eon, you're fixing your
Midos
and the
Makoros
and then...
So let's, let me go back. So the Misnagdim of Musar had a number of Tainas. One Taina, which goes back to Volozhin already, is Taira is enough. Taira is going to be Matire you. Taira is going to purify you. The Yerushalmi says, Halvai, Aisvi, Azu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, even if they leave me, Hama'or Shabbat, the light of the Torah, Machziru L'Musaf. This was Rav Chaim Shita to this very day. Brisk is, you know, not so misnagate, or is misnagate to Musar. Again, Rav Chaim was not against learning Mesilas Yesharim. Rav Chaim used to learn. In fact, the Brisk Rebbe used to say, how would he describe it? He said that his father used to carry around the Kleiner Bichlich, the small book, meaning Rav Chaim had in his talis, small Sifrei Musar that he would learn Avada. Nobody, maybe those guys in Tells, but no Adam Gadol is against what? I'm against Musar. I'm against good Midas. No such thing. A kol maidim. But Rav Chaim held that Torah alone will be Matayor you. The Chafetz Chaim said later, and this was Rav Yisrael Sashkafa, that Torah is the diet for a healthy neshama. You have a healthy neshama, Torah will give you all that you need. But when the neshama is makoko, there's sickness, you need refuah. And refuah might be additional to Torah, tikkun hamidas. Now, the emes is, I'm going to tell you a word from the Gran Mishlei, because the emes is, although Rabbi Yisrael Salanter founded this movement of Musar, but the emes is, the real founder, without going back to Chazal, is the Gra himself. Now, keep in mind, Rav Zundel of Salant, who is the hidden Nister that inspired Rabbi Yisrael, is a Talmud, or was a Talmud of Rav Chaim Volozhiner. And let me say, that the very first Sefer of the Gra that was printed after his Patira, based on his own Sivoy, was not his Perish on Shulchan Aruch, or his Chidushim B'chol HaTorah Kula, it was his Sefer on Mishlei, which is by Yiras Hashem and Musar and the like. And although it's not his own words, the Sefer Mishlei was actually written by Rav Menachem Mendel of Shklov, based on, in other words, it's not in the Gra's own Lashonis, except the Chelek of Nister. He says when the Gra spoke B'derech Nister, he took it down word for word. And when it's not Bederech Nister, he wrote down the Teichen, and then he would read it to the Gaon, and the Gaon would nod his head if it was good, or shake his head if it was not right, and the like. But that was the first Sefer, because the Gras said, Reishis Chochma, Yiras Hashem. Now, yeah,
Doesn't the Gras say in Mishlei there that Pirkei Avos is only for people that aren't learning the Torah?
I don't recall that quote, because I want to tell you something else that the Gra says. And I don't use this word anymore because it was too unpleasant. The reaction I got was too unpleasant, because the person just told me I made it up and the Gra didn't say it. But the Gra absolutely says it. In fact, I saw it at Mosi Shabbos again. The Gra says the following. This is the guy didn't believe. He said, you made it up. Okay, I didn't make it up. The Gra says the following. It's a mamish apella. The Gra says that everyone knows Chazal tell us Taira nimshelas kamayim. Taira is compared to water. So a lot of reasons. Water is necessary for life. Taira is necessary for life. Water purifies and cleans. Taira purifies and cleans. Liquids, water goes from high to low. Taira goes from Gaiva to another, right? We all of us know this. Listen to what the Gra says. The Gra says that Taira is compared to water, and an Adam is compared to Adama, right? We come from Adama. So he says water has a Kayach HaTzmicha. If I pour water on ground, whatever is in the ground is going to grow. If there's wheat in the ground, wheat seeds, you're going to get wheat. If there's poisonous plants, you're going to get poison. Whatever is there, the water is matzmiach. Zok de Gra, this is the Gra, that if a person has midos tovos, a person has rachamim, a person has anava, a person has chesed, it's a dover pashit, the Torah is going to make him more of a baal chesed, more of a rachamim. Now that's not exceptional. That's not right. But this is the one that the guy denied that the Gra said it. He says, if chas v'shalom, a person has midas mushchaseis, not only will the Torah not be metayer him, the Torah will make it worse. The Torah has a kayach of accentuating, enlarging, and expanding whatever is within the person. The baal gaiva will become more of a baal gaiva. Now, the emphasis is this is a tzarich yin gadol, because I'm not sure what this means practically. Let's say I have real bad midos. So is the Gra going to tell me, oh, you shouldn't learn Torah because it's going to make you worse? Avada not. Avada, we're going to say, learn. But the Gra says, without a conscious effort in tikkun midos, the Torah could be mashkashu. And the Gra quotes the Gemara to that effect, because the Gemara's lashon is, zocha, Nasa lay sam chayim. If you're zeicha, the Torah is a sam, an elixir of chayim. Lay zacha, nasa lay sam mavis. It doesn't say, you'll die because of your bad midos. The Torah gufa can become a sam mavis. Now,
what about Hamar Shabbat?
Well, it's a good kasha. As I say, these were two deists here. And the Gra himself, I have to see if he says what you said, but the Gra himself, I can find it. It's in Perek Yud Tes. Huh?
The Eved Shlomo brings it.
The Eved Shlomo brings it, that's correct. But it's also, but the Eved Shlomo brings it from the Gra Mishlei.
Don't we see this all over? Don't we see this concept all over?
Yes, we do. As a matter of fact, no. So the Lakewood guy told me. When the Lakewood guy told me, he didn't believe it. He had a good teretz, which the emes is, I would be makabel the teretz if not for the Gra. I said, people learn and have bad midos. He said they would be worse without their learning. Okay, I mean that's not a bad teretz. Meaning, as bad as somebody is, he told me this guy argued, which again I hear. It's not shayach to say that his learning is makalkel him. If he's a mushkas, he would have been more of a mushkas. That's a good teretz. That is be'etzim a good teretz. But all I'm saying is the Gra taka says fakir. Now,
it makes them better given terutzim for the minus mushkas.
Right. Okay.
That's what it does. It trains their mind.
Yeah. Now, here is the thing. Now, I admit that this is not a word for all audiences, simply because if somebody is beginning learning, you don't want to give them a message. It's not so important. Maybe you have to be careful where you say this, because Chas V'Shalom, a person might use it as an excuse. Why should I bother learning Gemara? That's a separate question. But it doesn't change what the Gemara says. The Gemara says it. Although, as I say, I don't know what the practical taitzah is going
to
be. Because
you don't give answers to the Mishkasim either.
Well, okay, I'll tell you the Russia. Now, the thing is, if this would have been a Hasidic Shavuot, so we could say, all right, okay, then, it's a way of not being Machshav Torah. Okay, and even then, I meant that as a little joke. I mean, the early Hasidics were not that way either. But, the one thing the Gra could not be accused of, certainly, is not being Machshav Limud HaTorah. Remember, the guy, for most of his life, learned 22 hours a day. His sleep in a 24-hour period is only 2 hours, and never more than a half an hour at a time. In fact, there's a whole story that he once went to a chasna, which he very rarely went to a chasna, but he went to a chasna in some city, and whenever the Gra would travel, which wasn't that much, people would rent out 5-minute increments to climb on a ladder and watch him sleep or watch him learn. They would peer in the window just to see the Gra sleeping or learning or whatever it would be. So one time, the Gra apparently slept 32 minutes instead of 28 minutes. So he woke up and he was crying and misabel. And he said, this city took away 2 minutes. He was mitzayer, tshuva for bittul Torah. And the whole city, it's put down in the Meissen, the whole city was Sebrachen, and it spread throughout the whole city. We took away 2 minutes from the Gra. 20 years later, he had to be back in the same city, and he only slept 28 minutes. And he says, Baruch Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was machzer li'abedasi. And then the whole city was so happy because they remembered for 20 years. Probably what happened is somebody at the chuppah would probably wake him up after 28 minutes. Say, this is the only way, we'll have a tshuva, we'll have a ticket. Yeah.
Maybe one of the answers is that if a person does have the Kilkomidos, Reishis Chochmah Yiras Hashem, the Yiddish, that's where the Musa would come in. It's just not having Torah, but if you have Torah without Yiras Shemaim, the whole thing falls apart.
Yeah. And the Chavitz Chaim said, again, this is after Rabbi Yisrael, but the Chavitz Chaim said that a yeshiva without Hadracha in Musar is a bor b'rishus harabim. It's a bor, because what is a bor? A bor is you're creating a dangerous takola. You're putting out rabbanim, you're putting out mechanchim, you're putting out Rosh Yeshiva, you're putting out the spiritual mashpiyim of a dor. And if they're mushkas and mitas, if they're balei gaiva, what type of hashpa are they going to give to the new generation? Either one of two things are going to happen. Either the new generation will reject them, or what might even be worse, they'll follow them.
They'll learn from them.
So either they won't learn from them, they won't learn the good that they could offer, or they'll learn from them. And in Kachab, the Rabbi Nisenu HaRabim, this is something that we sometimes see. So this is the Gra. Now again, as I say, I can't figure out myself what halacha lemaisa the Gra would say to somebody who's mushkas midas. He wouldn't tell the person don't learn, for sure, but nevertheless, this is why I say that the real father of the Tznuas HaMusar, the Akifin, indirectly, is in fact the Gra. The Gra did not make a movement, right? The Gra was talking about private Tikkun HaMidah, but Yisrael made it public. Now, yeah. I'll get to it, because we're already running out of time. I just want to say a little bit more about Rabbi Yisrael first. And Rabbi Yisrael did this on multiple levels. Initially, he was working with Talmidei Chachamim and Bnei Torah. He was doing it in the yeshiva world. That's why the first tekufa of his activity was in Vilna, in Kovna. These were cities of Talmidei Chachamim. There was no Slobodka yeshiva yet, but these were Talmidei Chachamim, Bnei Torah, etc. And that is where he got his great, great, famous Talmidim, who were Gedolei Torah, the Simcha Zisal of Kelim, etc. But he also had a vision of spreading this to Balabatim, who were not necessarily Bnei Torah. Business people, peddlers, shoemakers, tailors, that he saw that they also needed to work on Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, and Yiras Hashem. So he started all sorts of shiurim, all sorts of, he traveled, he was a traveler, meaning after he left his yeshiva, he essentially, Vilna was his base, but he spent most of the year just going around different places. And he was miyasid quite a few things. He was miyasid in the Vilna area, 50 batei musar. And a lot of them were for Pashat Balabatim. And then later, he went to France and Germany. In those days, to France and Germany, very, very few religious Jews. In fact, he met with the Shimshon HaFal Hirsch, and they had some collaboration on different projects. So a lot of Rav Yisrael's life, he spent with people who mamish had no shaykhus to Yiddishkeit. He was one of the first people that was involved in what we call today Kiruv Rechaikim. So in his early tekufa, so you see how he's going outward in different circles. His first work were with Bnei Torah and Talmidei Chachamim Muflagim. He then branched out to the Frum Balabatim in Lita. And then he moved to France and Germany. And then, of course, it wasn't only Musar anymore. Then it was Kiruv and Mitzvahs and Torah.
Translate the Talmud into French.
That's correct. He had many, many projects, some of which panned out, some of which did not pan out. He wanted to translate the Gemara into French and German, and he was hiring people to do it. He even taught himself, well, German he knew, but he even taught himself French to be able to talk to university students. He went to colleges. He went to college campuses. Now, he didn't look like, he wasn't like, the college Kiruv guy, looks like one of the boys or whatever it is. I mean, he was a Litvisha Rav of great, great stature. But because he had no ego, because everything was L'Shem Shemayim, he would put himself in any environment, in any matzav, to be Makariv people. People didn't realize they were talking to a Gadol Hador. But he would sit, he would go over Ashrei with somebody. I mean, Mamish, a Gadol in Shas and Paisik and Mamish. But he would go over Ashrei, he would go over whatever it is to teach people a little Hadracha. He taught, as I said, he taught the longshoremen in Königsberg, how to do ship work with Vishinoi, etc. And every once in a while, for his own spiritual batteries and also for his Talmidim, he would come back to Vilna for a month at a time to be in a maskeris of Torah and Yerushalayim, but then he would go back to the hinterlands. He was maybe sometimes the only frum Jew. He didn't even in many places he lived, and he would wander from place to place like an ani. There was no minyan. There was no shul, but there were yidden, and he would try to have a shaychus with them. Yeah. Yes, in fact, the story goes, the last day of his life. The last day of his life, he died in, I believe, in France. And he was rooming, he was dorming, so to speak. He shared an attic with an old yid, an old poor yid, an Ebuchel yid. And he saw that the yid was afraid of being with a dead body. And we all knew he was gonna die. So he spent the last moments of his life where an Adam Gadol, you'd think, Cheshbon HaNefesh and Tshuva, just calming the person and saying, it's nothing, a dead body is just a body, it's nothing, the Neshama goes to Hashem, but the body is a body, nothing to be afraid of. You'll call the Chevra Kadisha, they'll pick me up, and everything will be fine, and don't be afraid. And he held it was Kedai, in his last moments on earth, to make somebody feel a little better and not to be so afraid. And he held that was more Kedai. And many, many stories. Again, if you look at the Tumas HaMusar, I can give you 300 pages of stories. The famous story about he didn't come to Shul Kol Nidre because a woman left a baby and the baby was crying and he spent time with the baby. This was the whole idea, of chesed, of caring about the other. This is his famous teaching, your gashmias is my ruchnias. If you have a gashmias tikkunid, it's my ruchnias. A person's face is a rishus harabim, right? So when you're frowning, you're being mafria, the rishus harabim, you don't have the right to do that. All of these things. For matzah, they asked him, what things should we, when we're baking matzah, what hidurim should we keep in baking the matzah? He said, the hidurim are, don't be mitzayer the almanos, that are making the dough. You know, don't be too hard on them and the like.
It wasn't a fellow. Tahor wasn't a fellow.
That's correct. different mice about Natila Shadayim. You know, they didn't have indoor sinks, so the water had to be brought from a well. So if there's an Erev or whatever. So he was very mitzamtzem in Natila Shadayim, and the question is, the Gemara in Chulin says that the more water, malei chafnoi tivusa, for carrots, you have to be generous in the water, it's a simen bracha. He said, that's actually where he said the famous words, I'm not going to be a tzaddik in somebody else's cheshvin, because the almana is whatever it's going to bring. Now, I'll end with one more mice. Again, there's so many mice, and Rav Yisrael is one of the great, yeah, which one? Oh, hitting somebody with chal, yeah, that's right. The mice goes that he was once traveling with, because he was always traveling, he never stayed in one place, he was always going. He once came to a city in Germany which actually had one of his Talmidim. Wonderful thing. One of his Talmidim was Mamish there. And the Talmud said, come to me for Shabbos, it'll be the most wonderful thing. You know, the Talmud was wealthy also. He says, we have a Shabbos Suda, the Baruch Hashem, not only is there the Gashmias, is good, I know the Rebbe doesn't care about that, but we have Zemiras, we have Divrei Torah, between the courses, we learn and we do Musar. So he saw Salantra said, and then Baruch Hashem, the Suda is Nimshach, 4 hours. And we bench and Kavana. So he saw Salantra said, I will come to you on the Tanai that we from Kiddush to benching is a half an hour. If you can't do it in a half an hour, he says, I'm not coming. So the Talmud didn't understand, half an hour, okay, so have a half an hour. So it's like super speed corner. And there's a woman that they hired, a cook, an almana that was the cook. So the person said, well, Rebbe, we're finished, we benched. So he says, I want to speak to the almana, to the cook. So the almana comes out. Rabbi Yisrael says to the almana, I really want to ask your mechila because I rushed you, I made you rush, and I know it was a tircha. She said, Rebbe, this was the greatest thing anybody ever did to me. I have a son at home, a 10-year-old, and we have our own Shabbos Suda, you know, after I'm finished here. And we never start before 1 o'clock in the morning. Now my child is asleep, he's not even up, we can't eat together, we can't spend time together. Baruch Hashem, you let me go home at 8 o'clock, I can have Kiddush, and we can eat with my son, and we can talk, and Baruch Hashem, Rebbe, this was the greatest chesed. So Rabbi Yisrael looks at his Talmud and says, don't be a tzaddik on somebody else's chesed. He says, and that's what he says. Rabbi Yisrael figured it out on his own, and he wanted the Talmud to see such a thing. Okay.
That's a leader. Yeah. From the leader.